Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us on this beautiful afternoon. Last day of school for my children, and I'm guessing many across the Midwest, except some I know are probably already out. So it's a very exciting day in my household. Everyone kind of skipped out of bed and right onto that bus. So do you remember what that's like to have that last day of school in summer ahead of you?
A particularly unmitigated sense of jubilation.
Yes.
If I recall that the world, all things in the world were beautiful, you almost start singing Louis Armstrong songs.
I often tell my students when they are just so excited to get done with college and get into the workforce, I keep saying, don't wish it away. Don't wish it away. It's summer. Summer. That's the only thing that you really miss when you start working, I think.
Oh, it's very true. I feel like when I see the kids exiting the educational establishments that I should kind of do the same from work as well. But I have a feeling that that's not okay.
I would be very sad if I showed up on Friday morning and there was no Ryan. I'm just saying, you need to show up. Well, many of you know that besides getting to chat with you here on KTIS each Friday, I do also teach at two Christian universities. And as such, I get a ton of questions by young women having to do with leadership and a woman's role in the church, especially those who feel a call to ministry, to leadership, or to teaching. And some of those conversations are just heartbreaking, to say the least, with the struggles that they've had. And my wise producer, Grace, was kind enough to introduce me to an author who spent 7 years speaking with female Christian leaders about their experiences, kind of trying to nail down these obstacles that women might face if they are called to be in ministry, in leadership, or in teaching. So what this person did is she nailed down obstacles that kind of prevent women from thriving in leadership or in these roles. And it's a conversation that, in my experience, women are almost afraid to have, like to admit that they are struggling. But it seems like in this pure, unadulterated adoration that they have for God and wanting to fulfill his purpose, that this is a conversation worth having. So I am delighted to be able to introduce my guest for today. I know you're going to love just hearing from her. Dr. Haley Gray Scott is an author. She's an independent social researcher who focuses on issues related to leadership and spiritual formation. She holds a PhD from Talbot School of Theology and teaches seminary courses in spiritual formation, theology, and leadership in seminaries across the country. Her writing has appeared in Christianity Today, Christian Education Journal, Real Clear Religion, Relevant, and many others. And she now lives in Denver, Colorado, with her husband, Paul, and their two daughters, Ellie and Viv. Haley, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. It's great to be with you both.
Well, absolutely. You know, there have been a lot of books. I've read a lot of books on women and finding their calling, but yours seems to go a step further, daring women almost to do mighty things. In fact, even the title is called Dare Mighty Things. And I'm just wondering how you came to be interested in this subject and spend so much time researching it.
You know, there's some things that I've done in my life where it was a process that evolved, and I can't really pinpoint a moment, but this isn't one of them. And I know exactly where I was when this journey started, and I was a librarian at Azusa Pacific University in Southern California. And there was this girl, Amy, who was a student worker in the library, and I knew Amy's story. She had come from a dysfunctional home, and she had had a really hard time growing up without her dad present, and she decided she wanted to go to a Christian college. Well, when she made that decision, her dad said, well, I'm not going to pay for any of your college. But she felt so passionate that God was going to do something through her life that she felt a Christian education was important. So she took a job and took out student loans and really made a commitment to go to college and to go to that Christian college. And one day she came up to me and she said, Haley, she goes, you know what? I know that God wants to do something amazing through my life. I know that I'm called into some kind of leadership, but when I go to the bookstore and I look for resources on how to manage my identity as a woman and my identity as a leader, I don't find anything. I find fluffy things that don't take me deep. And when she said that, I really just felt so much compassion for her. And I was like, you're right. There aren't a lot of resources for Christian women. And so I really wanted to create a resource, and I organized my education at Talbot around Christian women leaders, and just to provide resources to help women thrive in the places that they serve.
What seems to be the greatest obstacle that young women or women in general come up against when they feel that call to be in ministry or be in leadership? What's been your experience there?
Well, the first thing is always identifying yourself as a leader. Sometimes when we think of leaders, we think of the Winston Churchill. We think of Beth Moore. We think of these tremendous, visionary, amazing leaders that are really above and beyond it, the average person, or we think are above and beyond the average person. And so when we think of the big leaders, like, you know, the president or Winston Churchill or any kind of military leader, we think, oh, well, we're not really leaders. We're not really doing any kind of leadership. And so leadership really doesn't apply to me. And so understanding where you're leading and understanding that you are a leader is really difficult for a lot of women.
Well, and you do spend some time in your book just talking about the definition of what it means to be a leader, that it doesn't necessarily mean the volume of people or the large task, but it has a lot to do with influence. Talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. It's, you know, understanding that you're a leader, even in the smaller areas of life, doesn't mean that it's less great. If you're, let me think of it this way. If you're organizing a Bible study and you think, well, I just have a group of five women, that doesn't really make me a leader, you are demonstrating leadership. Even as a mom, you are demonstrating leadership. And the point isn't to diminish what leader means. It means to recognize the areas that you're taking an influence and you have an influence over other people and being a wise steward over that influence. If you don't recognize how you're being a leader, you can't think about how you can improve as a leader. And so that's really my passion, is that help women understand where they're leading, how they're leading, and help them to understand how to become a better leader.
And you do this by talking first about just looking at your gifts and your opportunities. Can you just help us understand what is that first step if you feel like you are being called into leadership of some sort?
Absolutely. I think that one of the first things that you can do is really look at your giftedness. There is a lot of spiritual inventory. There's a lot of tests that you can do to figure out what it is that you really do. In my experience, some of what was really helped me most of all is listening to what my friends have told me I'm good at. Because a lot of times I overlook what it is that I'm good at because I'll say, oh, it's really not that big of a deal, and I'll kind of minimize whatever it is that other people say I'm good at. I listen to my husband tell me,
We're going to take a short break right now, see if we can figure out why we seem to be losing Haley. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Connecting Faith. And if you're listening and want to contribute to the conversation, we sure would love to hear from you. Give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. The book today that we are discussing with Dr. Haley Gray Scott is Dare Mighty Things, Mapping the Challenges of Leadership for Christian Women. And we'll be right back.
Faith Radio is great news that lasts.
Now watch this. You can read this later, but let me tell you. God comes up to Gideon, and this is his address to him. He says, "Hail, O mighty man of valor." Can you see Gideon looking around, trying to figure out, who is he talking to? This isn't me. Isn't it wonderful that God sees what we can become instead of what we are.
Meeting you at the intersection of faith and life every day. Faith Radio. Helping you grow deeper in your faith.
What does it mean to be truly spiritual? Hey friends, this is Susie Larson. On the next Live the Promise, I'm welcoming back pastor and Faith Radio programmer Chip Ingram of Living on the Edge. We're going to look at what it means to live a Romans 12 life and why following Christ is more than a set of rules or rituals.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson, weekdays from 3 to 4 on Faith Radio.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're talking a little bit about vision today and purpose and trying to find ours. Dr. Haley Gray Scott is my guest today. She's an author and independent social researcher who focuses on issues related to leadership and spiritual formation. And she's written a book on research she's done for 7 years called Dare Mighty Things, Mapping the Challenges of Leadership for Christian Women. So we were talking a little bit, Haley, about how women tend to kind of shrink themselves, almost hide their gifts. Why in the world do we do this?
Well, we shrink our gifts for a lot of reasons. Maybe because our environments aren't exactly responsive to our gifts. Maybe because we're not used to expressing our gifts. And sometimes some women have actually told me that they, especially single women, have told me that they hide their gifts in order not to intimidate men.
Hmm. So how do you encourage them to not do that?
It's a good question, and it's really hard. You have to be confident, and you have to ground yourself theologically and biblically with the understanding that stewardship isn't just about money. It's about the gifts that God has given you. God has given us financial blessings in order for us to be able to bless others. He's also given us spiritual gifts so that we can bless others too. And when we're hiding that, we're actually putting it under a bushel, as the scriptures say. And we're commanded to let that light shine. Let it shine boldly and brightly and not be ashamed of what it is that we can do to glorify God and how God is able to be glorified through us.
Well, you do write about some would-be female leaders and even your own struggles as a young woman of thinking of yourself as like not being exceptional enough, not being enough. Can you talk a little bit about that? That myth that we seem to have ourselves in?
Right. Yeah, I have a great example of this. I've done it a couple of times in my life. Whenever I was in college, I read Till We Have Faces by C.S. Lewis. And I had been a writer since I was 12 years old. And I was published first when I was 13. And when I read Till We Have Faces, I thought, oh, my goodness, I can never do that. I might as well just hang my head up right now and never write another word. And I didn't for years. It's incredible, but I really did not write personal writing for years after reading that book because I thought I'm never going to measure up to that. And then I read A Pilgrim's Regress, which was C.S. Lewis's first book, and I thought, wow, this is a really bad book. This isn't nowhere near as good as the last one that he wrote. And I saw that there's room for growth. But and then again, when I was a first week of my master's degree program, I went with my mentor, Sarah Sumner, to downtown LA where she spoke for 5 hours with no notes. And she had the whole room riveted. And I thought, oh my gosh, there is no way I will ever be that comfortable and ever be that entertaining as a speaker. I might as well just not ever imagine myself to be a teacher. And it can be really intimidating when you compare yourself to other people. And whenever you think that just because you may not be as great or because you don't think you're as great as someone else, that you need to hide your gift, that you need to hold back in some way, it's really tempting to do that or to think about hiding your gift because you don't think that you're as good as someone else.
I remember having that conversation with one of my professors who was my mentor as well, saying, I can't do what you do. I don't know how to do it. And he just said, I've been teaching for 30 years. This is your first class. And yet we look at what other people are doing and we want to be able to do what they can do now. And it does have something to do with the expectations that we place on ourselves. Did you find in interviewing other Christian leaders that we tend to have these very high expectations of what it is that we can produce?
Oh, absolutely. The United States General Social Survey every year measures happiness, general satisfaction with life. And what they found is that the more opportunities women have, the less satisfied they are with their lives. And what the researchers think is happening is that because women have so many opportunities, they expect that they should be great at everything. They should, you know, they should have gourmet meals. They should have the perfectly clean home. They should have well-groomed kids. They should have the perfect career. And when they don't measure up to that idea that they have, that ideal, then they feel really dissatisfied with their life. And the key is to not expect so much of yourself and to be gracious with what it is that you can do with the time that you have right now and the season of life that you're in right now.
Well, you do write about how female leaders just have to manage that tension of piecing together the spheres of work and home in a way that honors the integrity of both and how challenging that is. You do give a couple of tips to expect less, to resist comparisons, and to get creative. Can you talk a little bit more about that, those some hard strategies on how to resist that?
Yeah, resisting comparison is extremely important because it's not only is it damaging because there's always going to be someone better than you in some area. There's always going to be someone that has more resources. There's always going to be someone that may be a little bit more gifted than us in an area or two. And the danger of that is that you don't understand your own giftedness. There's a phrase that I'm going to butcher that says something like, "How silent would the woods be if only the bird with the most beautiful voice was singing?" And what that is saying is that we need all the voices. We don't need just one person. We need all the voices. We don't need just the best. We need everybody. In the kingdom of God, we need all women participating in the work of God. We don't need just the best and the brightest Christian women creating nonprofits and teaching Bible study and impacting missions around the world. We need all women participating, not just the best and the brightest. And another thing about comparing is it's so deceiving because you don't know what's going on in another person's life. One of the things that I talk about in the book is think about how many people say they want to be like Jesus. Well, Jesus was an itinerant preacher that didn't have a home, didn't have a place to lay his head, was buried in a borrowed grave, and he never wrote a single sentence in his life. And if you look at that in this side of heaven, you'd think that's not something I would envy. That's not something I would aspire to, but yet he was the most amazing man that ever lived. And so comparing, you don't really understand. You don't have the whole truth of what's going on in the person's life and how God is working through that person's life. And so when you compare yourself to other people, it's just really your own idea of that person that you're comparing them to.
In fact, I giggled a little bit when I read the chapter titled Superwoman, Exposing the Myth of the Exceptional Woman. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Superwoman. I think this is like, behind understanding that you're gifted, I think this is the second biggest issue for Christian women. And here's a little bit about how I found out this problem. Because in my research, I asked people what they thought of Christian women, and then I asked people what they thought of Christian women leaders. And when I, you know, you can plug them into a computer programming and they do a statistical analysis. And what I found is that the way we view Christian women and the way we view Christian women leaders are completely different. We think that Christian women leaders are more relational, more agentic, which means they're able to get things done, more task-oriented. They're better at people skills. They're more transformational leaders. They have so much. We rate them so high that they're almost idealistic. And when I looked at that, I thought, we think so badly of Christian women, and yet we think so good of Christian women leaders. And I came up with the theory of the exceptional woman. And this has happened in several different fields where the myth that no women can lead has given way to the myth that only exceptional women can lead.
I think I remember having a conversation with a colleague of mine who said exactly that, that they're looking for that one exceptional woman who would be able to lead. What do you say to people who seem to perpetuate that?
Well, as long as you're looking for only the exceptional woman, you're only going to find, quote unquote, exceptional women. Because you're never going to actually, if you don't expect that all women can have leadership potential, then you're not going to look for leadership potential in all women. We can only identify, and we can only really see what we're looking for, in a sense, because what we believe governs what we see. And if we don't think that women have that leadership potential, we're not going to look to cultivate it. We're not going to look to cultivate women leaders. And there's so much research that goes into leadership development. But if we don't expect that women, Christian women, can lead, then we're not going to seek to develop them. And so it's really important to understand that all women have the capacity, the leadership potential, to lead in so many different ways, because we need to plug in resources to help develop women as leaders.
Well, and it seems like if we're only looking for the one, then that would remove a large population of people who do have a desire and the giftedness to serve God, to reach people for his kingdom. And yet we're putting them in a category that says we don't really need you because you're not exceptional.
Absolutely. And then you have the women that are in that group saying, well, I really am not exceptional. I mean, I don't know about you, Jill, but the reason I am where I am today is because someone believed in me. Not because I thought, wow, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do a doctorate, and I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to have all these goals. I did have goals, but I wouldn't be where I am if someone had not invested in me, if someone had not had seen potential in me and said, hey, Haley, you know what? You're really good at this. Invest in this. I believe in you. If you don't have anyone believing in you, you can only go so far. And what I see happening is we don't really believe in Christian women. We don't really believe in most Christian women. We believe in some Christian women, but the exceptional ones, but we don't believe in most of them. And then Christian women don't believe in themselves. And so who's going to take the first step? Is it Christian women going to step up and say, you know what? I'm gifted by God. I'm going to step up, and I'm going to use the giftedness that he's given me. Are they going to be courageous enough to do that? Or is it going to be other people, especially men, saying, wait a minute, is there giftedness around women right now that I'm not noticing? Maybe I should notice. How can I invest in them? How can I draw the leadership potential in them and put them in a place of influence where their giftedness can really shine?
One of my greatest joys as a teacher is being able to call out students, male, female, matters not to me, when I do see something that is extraordinary in the way that they are either presenting themselves or presenting the gospel, or maybe it's writing or their ability to speak in class and have teachable moments. To be able to call that out to help them see something that they may not have seen, it's just, it's the joy of a teacher and or a leader. It's the joy of a leader as well. And if someone had not done that for me, there is no way that I ever would have set foot in a classroom or on the radio as well.
Absolutely. We need people to believe in us. Yeah, I would not be where I am today if it hadn't been, for example, for my husband and for my father. Right now I'm writing a post for Christianity Today for Father's Day, and I'm thinking about the impact of men on the lives of women and how deeply it is that men can help women thrive as leaders. I would not be where I am today if it had not been for the support of my dad and my husband.
Some inspiring words from author Haley Gray Scott. We're talking about her book, Dare Mighty Things, Mapping the Challenges of Leadership for Christian Women. And if you have a comment or question, or maybe you'd like to get one of our resources from our Faith Radio resource shelf, we'd love to put something in your hands. If you'd like to get a question or comment on the air, give us a call, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for joining us today. We are talking with Dr. Haley Gray Scott about her book, Dare Mighty Things. And we've been talking a bit about women in leadership and especially women in church leadership. Haley, you write about churches today that they don't often talk about the women of the Bible. What have you found for reasons for this omission and the effects of such?
Well, a lot of the... Are you talking about in the women's ministry in general?
Mm-hmm.
What I talk about in women's ministry.
Yep.
In one of my chapters in the book, I talk about women's ministries and the current paradigm for the spas and the teas that typify some of the women's ministries across the country. And what I find really surprising is that we're not digging deep into the heritage of what it means to be a Christian woman, and we're not reflecting deeply on outward. How can Christian women serve? And I don't really think that anyone knows where it is that we got this idea that women's ministries have to be fluff and they have to be about spas and teas and maybe decorating. I've experienced that a lot in churches that I go to. They think that it's the home decorating and crafts centered around that. I'm not really sure exactly where that came from, but if you look back into the 19th century, most of the major movements in social reform were started by Christian women. Christian women who did not even yet have the right to vote were behind some of the major social reforms here in the United States. And they were behind the temperance movement. They were building houses to help women get out of prostitution, because a lot of women that were in poverty levels often ended up in prostitution rings. And so they built homes to help women get out of this movement. They helped end the slavery that was in the South. And they were behind so many movements, and they did so much good on behalf of society. We don't talk about those things anymore, and we don't set those women up as models anymore. And I really argue in the book that we need to return to that. And because I don't think that our ultimate happiness is going to be found in reflecting on ourselves. It's a friend calls it navel gazing. I think that there's an idea in our churches that women are tired and stressed and they need spas. They need to relax, and then they'll find happiness. But that's not what the scriptures say we'll find happiness at. The scriptures say that we'll find happiness, contentment in serving the Lord and glorifying God on earth. That's where we're going to find our happiness. And so it's not surprising that these women's ministries aren't being effective. I've talked to so many women's ministry leaders who say, I'm doing what I think that people want, but no one's showing up for these women's ministries. And I think it's because Christian women really understand that that's not what's going to provide them deep satisfaction. They want to do something meaningful with their lives. They want to do something meaningful with their time, and they know that that's not going to provide it. And so I argue we really need to hold up these models. We need to talk about these women, Frances Willard and the Grimke sisters, who did some amazing things on behalf of society. N.T. Wright has this great quote in his book, Surprised by Hope. He says, Jesus got a hearing from his contemporaries mostly because of what he was doing. And not because of what he was saying, because what he was doing. He was going around healing people and spreading the good news and talking with people and talking to people, the Samaritan woman. This is what Jesus was doing, and he got a hearing from his contemporaries because of what he was doing.
Well, and you write that there are some women who have told you stories about how when they do come to their churches with some ideas on how to really get women into the Word so that they are serving others and serving alongside each other, which still builds relationships, that they come up with some locked doors. And
right.
Why do you feel that that's happening, or what's a good way to navigate through that? If you do truly feel that God has called you to build into women or men or children or whatever, to build into someone as a leader who is a female and yet gets that door shut?
It's a great question, and it's one of the most heartbreaking things that I had to deal with and hear about whenever in my research is listening to the stories of women who have heard the word no so many times. And most of the women granted that, well, I guess all of the women that I spoke with kept going even though they heard no. But as I heard these women talking to me about all these times that the door got slammed in their face when they had a great idea for ministry and the senior leadership said, no, we don't need that here, or no, you're wrong, this is not what God's calling you to do, I wondered how many women have heard no and just closed up shop and said, well, I must have heard God wrong. How many women turned away from their calling because someone told them no? And so I want to encourage the women listening that if you're facing a locked door, if you get something slammed in your face and you feel very strongly that you ought to be doing something, that there's something that God has really laid on your heart, don't let no be the final word. Don't let it be the final word. The thing is that God is still the same as he was in the very beginning. And if he's able to part the Red Sea, he's able to part the Red Seas in your life too. He's able to make a way for you to use that giftedness. And it may not be in the best of conditions or the way that you think that it ought to happen, but God will find a way to make your giftedness shine, to use your giftedness for his kingdom, to glorify him. Don't be discouraged by the no. Keep going. Don't look away. Don't be disheartened. Just keep going. Keep persevering. Keep praying. Keep in the word. And don't be so discouraged that you're driven to despair and to give up on what you feel like God may be calling you to do.
You offer some really helpful strategies for navigating these challenges, and of course one of them is to not give up. What are some practical strategies that people can put in place if they do feel discouraged and saying, well, that must not be what, I must have made a mistake, couldn't have been what God was calling me to? What's a helpful strategy for them to employ?
Well, it really depends on what it is that they want to do. For example, if they feel like they want to minister to, let's open a food bank in a downtown urban area, for example, and they go to their local church first, and the local church is not receptive to that, well, that doesn't mean that they should just give up on the idea of establishing that food bank. That means that they need to find other ways to do it. Maybe it is through partnering with another church. Maybe it is partnering with another nonprofit. Maybe it is doing a kickstart where you can finance your own way and get other people to donate. There's other ways and other avenues, or maybe a Bible study. That is a big example. Maybe you're wanting to teach a Bible study, but your local church is not receptive to you teaching that for whatever reason, a theological issue, or maybe, you know, there are a variety of reasons women have not been able to teach Bible studies at their local church. You could start a blog. Right now, it is wide open opportunities for women writers. and for women bloggers. I mean, you have a virtual unlimited audience almost. If you could just start a weekly blog and teach the Bible through your blog or teach podcasts. I know a lot of women who do teach weekly podcasts, Bible studies. And those are ways to get the word out about God and to honor your calling. Just find creative ways to do what it is that He may be calling you to do, and pay attention to the doors that may be opening for you. I really believe that if there are doors closing, that God will open doors.
Well, and we've been talking a lot about calling as it relates to ministry, but calling's not just related to ministry. It refers to our roles as spouses and as parents, as workers and as citizens, right?
It does. One of the most beautiful books I've read about calling is taken from Martin Luther's work, but it's a book by Jean Edward Veith, and it's called God at Work. And he really underscores how calling, there's almost two or three aspects of calling. There's the upward calling we get when we're called into the body of Christ, and then there's the outward calling, and that's our calling out in the world. And that's our calling. That calling flows. Our Christian life flows through every single aspect of our lives, not just through our vocational ministry, but through our work, through our jobs as mothers, and because motherhood is a job. I've got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, so it feels like a real job right now. But and you know, I think sometimes, you know, a lot of women feel like motherhood is not as good as ministry, and they feel really discouraged about the amount of time that motherhood takes, because they're not able to put as much as they want into ministry. And I still struggle with this. I wrote this, but I struggle with it every day in trying to understand, okay, I spend 12 hours a day with my kids, and at the end of the day, I don't have as much time as I want to write. And just being gracious with yourself and understanding that motherhood or your secular job is also a calling and a place where God can use you.
Well, and one of the things I just enjoyed reading about is you talk a little bit about personal satisfaction and calling, and that our calling is not always to personally satisfy us. It may be to satisfy what God is doing in us and through us. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's one of the things that I'm most passionate about, because when I was writing the chapter on calling and doing the research on calling, because I think calling is pretty nebulous idea for a lot of us. As much resources as we have on it, we still don't have a really good grasp of what it means and how does it impact our daily lives. And all of the resources that I saw on calling, the contemporary resources, really focused on our own personal satisfaction. And I think personal satisfaction is a good way of identifying what your calling is. But it's important to note that's not the purpose of your calling. The purpose of your calling isn't personal satisfaction, though that's what you get when you're doing it. The purpose of your calling is to glorify God and be a conduit through which Christlikeness spreads to other people. And sometimes when you're in your calling, it's not going to be all pleasant. It's going to be hard. And I just think of Jesus in the garden when he's sitting there and he's agonizing. He knows what's coming. And he's like, if there's any other way, please let it be. And then he says, nevertheless, not your will be done, or not my will be done, but your will be done. And I think that's really important for us to remember, because sometimes our calling takes us to terrible places. It takes us to Golgothas. And if we're thinking of calling as just as personal satisfaction, when we're on Golgotha, we might second guess ourselves. We might think, I must have been wrong. I must have read the signs wrong, because everything seems to be going wrong. Look, look, I'm suffering so much here. This must be wrong. I must have been wrong. And that's not the case. Sometimes our calling takes us to dark and difficult places, and our job is to be faithful and to persevere through those times and to keep going and to keep obedient to the voice of God and what he's asked us to do with our lives.
Well, and I feel like parenting is really part of that. Sometimes you feel like this foray into parenting is a bit tangential, but you come back to it because you realize that if that of all the things that you're doing, that is making you more
Absolutely.
And more Christ-like. And so it's nice to be able to apply all that you learn as a parent to your calling, your professional calling, I guess, if you would call it. But that he really does change those callings from year to year or from season to season, depending on what it is that he needs to see done in you.
He does. And, you know, I know for me, right now, I'm not getting as much writing done or research done because I'm the mom of a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. And my husband is building a ministry. And so he's at work from 8 until 7:30 at night. And then he's gone one or two weekends a month. And you know what? It's just me and my girls. And at the end of the day, I'm really tired and I don't have as much time to put into ministry as I want to. And there's a big temptation there to feel like that's not valuable. It's not, you know, motherhood is not as valuable as ministry. And, you know, I fight that same struggle still, even though I know better. It's just something that you have to just every day say, that's not the truth. What I'm doing has really important implications for the rest of humanity. I'm building little people. Mm-hmm. As I think it's Anna Green Gables who says, I'm writing living epistles. Right now I'm writing the lives of these little girls, and it's very important work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love to give a shout out to all the parents out there. You are absolutely doing God's work, especially women who feel the way that you and I have both felt at times. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Haley Gray Scott. We're talking about women in leadership. Her book, Dare Mighty Things, is just a great read for any woman who is in leadership, especially in ministry. We'd love to give you something from our resource table as well. If you give us a call or have a question, you can also email us a question on our website, myfaithradio.com. Otherwise, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back with Haley Gray Scott.
There's no shortage of messages in your life. Phone calls, text messages, face-to-face requests.
Mom.
But in the midst of your daily communication overload, find messages that build your faith and encourage your walk with God. Compelling stories, insightful podcasts, and ways to get involved. Get the latest from Faith Radio in your Facebook newsfeed when you join us on our Facebook page. Just search My Faith Radio on Facebook.com to join us today.
We're blessed to hear the stories.
God just has walked us miracle after miracle.
They're stories of God at work, and we're humbled when he uses something heard on Faith Radio to reach you where you're at.
I'm just so blessed by all your speakers. I just want to thank you for all that you provide.
Have you been impacted by what you've heard on Faith Radio? Would you share your story with us? Call our Faith Line to pass on your story today. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH.
Well, thanks so much for joining us in Connecting Faith today. We've been talking with author Haley Gray Scott. She's written a book called Dare Mighty Things. Would love to be able to just chat with you for our last segment here, Haley, on just how we as women can be disciplined in growing spiritually. What is something, if you were just to give someone some advice on what can you do now to really start to hear God's calling and increase that confidence in you that you are hearing correctly?
One of the things that's been, by the way, that's a great question. It's one that I've thought quite a bit on. And one of the things that's been most helpful for me in my walk and for a lot of the women that I spoke with too, is that first is, you know, disengaging a bit from, you know, if you're really into social media and if you're, it's a necessary part of our lives to be really plugged in. And if you could disconnect from as many voices as you can, except for maybe those voices that are the closest to you. Remember earlier I referenced listening to what other people say we're good at. If we're going to grow spiritually, we really need to disengage from the voices and of culture and really listen to the voice of God and listen to the silence. In October, last October, I did the Grand Canyon from rim to rim, and I was completely disengaged from social media, from the internet for 3 days. 3 days out in that canyon, in that wilderness. And, you know, it was an amazing, profound silence. I expected to hear these great voices, this great epiphany, but it was silence. And I realized with all the competing voices that I was hearing, I couldn't really clearly hear the voice of God and hear my own inner voice deeply. It's like you're constantly responding to things rather than acting on your own and listening to what is actually your own thoughts. And that would be the first thing, is disconnecting. And then keeping the spiritual disciplines just on the forefront, you know, reading your Bible, staying in the Word, staying with prayer, not because you have to, but because you get to, because it benefits your soul so much when you invest in those spiritual disciplines. I like to keep a habit of regular prayer throughout the day, or utilize the breath prayers, which is just little short, quick prayers like "Bless me, Jesus," or "Thank you, Jesus," and to keep your things, to your mind mindful of the blessings that God has put in your life. Also, evaluate your company and the kind of people that you're around, and surround yourself with solid people that really want to grow. And if you're in a family environment where that's, you're surrounded by people who aren't Christians or who are Christians but really don't want to grow, I really encourage you to seek out community of believers to grow with and who are really committed to growing in the Christian walk. The Christian life is a communal faith, and we really need to be built in with a body of believers in order to grow as much as we can.
One of the things that I mentioned when we first spoke before the show is that it's just so comforting to hear stories of other female leaders in the church or in academia where you feel like people are actually experiencing some of the same joys and struggles that you are. What is a way that we can maybe get those stories out more often or find a way to check in with other people who may be experiencing what we are?
That's a great question. And it's one of the things that I'm really passionate about is sharing the stories of Christian women. Because as long as we don't share those stories, we're still going to think that only exceptional Christian women can serve. And we're not sharing the stories of how God is working through every Christian woman. And it's just amazing the things that he's accomplishing. And we really need to make a commitment to get to know how God is working in women that are right next to us in our church, maybe at our work, maybe find out how you can get involved in organizations abroad and what women are doing overseas or what women are doing in your own town. There's amazing ways that women are serving, and we need to figure out ways. People who are writers really need to pick up these stories and talk about how Christian women are leading. And that was one of the things that really led me to interview so many Christian women for this book, is just to tell their stories, to get them front and center, to show everyone that they're not so different from you and me.
Well, and I always encourage women too, you need to know your story and be able to share it so that when people do ask you about the joy that you have, I mean, we are committed, we are challenged to be able to share our story and to be willing to do that, especially for women who may be asking. There's a reason that they've asked you. So be prepared to tell your story, and we can start at the ground level as well. Haley,
right.
we only have a couple of minutes left. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to just pray for all those women who may be listening today and kind of wondering about their calling and also about finding other women who may be an asset in encouraging, or men in encouraging them along their way.
Absolutely. Abba, Father, what a tremendous honor it is to know you, to serve you, and to be a conduit through which you work. What a great honor the God of the universe is willing to use someone like me. I pray for the women listening, for those who may be confused about their calling. Lord, will you help them find a way to silence all the competing voices, the voices that tell them what they ought to do, what they should do, and show them, Lord, what you want them to do, what you've built them to do, how you've brought them, the environment, the struggles that they've been through, how they can use that to bless other people. I pray, dear Lord, that you give them the courage to follow through with that calling, the courage to keep going, even though they may hear a no. I pray, dear Lord, for women and men to all look around each other for the giftedness that is in their midst. Help us to see what's beautiful in the people around us. Help us to encourage the beautiful in other people. Help us to draw that out, to comment on it, and to bring that out in others so that you may be glorified. Thank you, dear Lord, for the opportunity to serve you and the opportunity to know you. May your will be done here on earth as it is in heaven. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Haley, thanks so much for joining us for this hour. It's just been a rich hour of not only information, but lots of inspiration as well. And if you're listening today and you'd like to find out more about Haley Grace Scott or her book, Dare Mighty Things, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com. We have some information on her there, so you can link to her other resources as well. Have a great weekend. You've been listening to Connecting Faith. Thanks, Haley.